I'm curious what I knew you had raced back in the day, but then so I was like, oh, what was Matt doing before like 2009 or whatever? What's your his le podcast rolling? What's your history? Because I first knew who you were when I saw you at Nationals in the Velo Roussillon kit. And I was like, whoa, who is this guy? Because I know a bunch of those Tennessee people. Looked you up after that, and then I think so you raced in 2009. Did you race before? Did you race after? Your mystery.
I start. Are we podcasting now?
Yeah, can we?
Yeah, that's fine. I did my first mountain bike race in 1993 or four. I was like 12, 13 years old. So I started mountain bike racing a lot, running a lot of cross country and track. And then that kind of transitioned into triathlon and got pretty serious in a triathlon. Was trying to be a pro triathlete in the early 2000s.
And you're in
And
Alabama at this point in time?
oh yeah, my whole life.
Okay.
But just the running, like I could never put on enough running mileage to be at a truly elite national level, and I just had to give it up and go straight bike. And I went straight bike like in 05, maybe 06. So I was always kind of like that TT kind of bike, century rides and mountain bike racing and stuff.
Was the running you couldn't get enough mileage cut from like injury or just you didn't like it or what was holding that up?
No, that was really my first passion was running, and I really thought that I could have a really good career in running, but I have a pretty significant leg length discrepancy. My right leg is a full centimeter longer than my left. I got it measured on a table with a ruler under X-ray. I went to like an orthopedic surgeon and he measured it. And so it's helpful to know the measurements in millimeters because now I can set up the bike with a more exact compensation. But that leg length discrepancy really ended my running career.
How does that work with cycling? Do you go too low on one leg or too high on one leg, like saddle wise?
So like if I go to a fitter who isn't really good, they'll set me up with the saddle too high because they'll set my saddle height for my long leg, and then I always feel like I'm reaching too far with my short leg. So with a 10 centimeter 10 1 centimeter full leg length difference, 5 millimeters is in the femur, 3 millimeters is in the tibia, and then the rest they didn't know exactly where it was. So I shim the cleat like 3 millimeters, and then on the long leg, I bring the cleat back. So it's like lengthening the leg, theoretically. I bring the cleat back by like 4 millimeters. And I just recently started shifting the cleats. I've been playing around with this my whole life, Brendan, like doing little things to get more symmetry on the bike and in my shoes. Like all my walking shoes are shimmed. My like leather dress shoes are all built up on the heel. Like it's a major issue that caused me problems my whole entire life. So I feel like I got it pretty dialed now.
Wow. Yeah, I'm team pull the cleats back. After having an issue with my Achilles, and then I have a broken sesamoid, the ball of your foot. One of them is a bipartite, so it's split in half. The other one at some point I sheared, and I think it was actually during the 2012 season. I was in a few races and it just started like burning. And a friend of mine like pushed me through the last stage of the cat tour of the Catskills. And the guy's like, oh, dude, your foot is broken. That's why. And so, anyways, long story short, I had to get just off the shelf orthotics, but they were like, lessen the lever. And so I started pulling my cleats back and actually felt way better, not foot wise, but just power wise. So, that's interesting. Man, well, that's got to be, I've always wondered what people did for that. That's, at least you've got it somewhat dialed and able to keep smashing. It's just clearly not holding you back.
Well, it you say that, but it really does. And I feel like it doesn't at my level because the volume's not there, but like the World Tour guys, I bet if you studied their bodies, the amount of asymmetry that they have is very small because at some point as your volume goes up, those asymmetries start to really explode into like a cascade of problems. And 20, you know, they're doing so much volume, it does come back to bite you.
How much you ride in a week? What's like low week to high week?
So when I don't, when I'm on vacation or like out of town and I don't have to go to work, like a high week is like 18 or 19 hours. And then a low week is 9, 10.
Cool. What do you travel a lot for work?
I used to, I did for about 10 years, a lot. And I try not to now.
What, yeah. Would you bring a bike, or was this back when you're doing triathlon stuff and you could just run a bit, or how do you manage that when you've got to get out of town?
You know, since I started racing after COVID, I haven't had to travel for work where I was training to where I needed to bring my bike, but I would just bring it. Like when the 11 years that I wasn't training and racing, I would fly my bike just for fun, just to go and ride.
Man, yeah, I struggle with that. I struggle with traveling with bikes. It just bothers me. I just don't enjoy it. So I don't think I could do a job where I had to constantly be traveling. I know a couple people that do it, but yeah, it's tough.
A lot of it has to do with the bag you have. You need the Sycon bag.
I've got an even better one. I got the
Bike
Box Allen. So it's similar. Okay. You don't take the handlebars off. I don't like taking my wheels off. I don't like taking my, I hate touching my bike. It's like, yeah. I want to ride it. I joked to my husband. I was like, man, if I won the lottery, the first thing I would have is a personal mechanic. And he's like, you should get one. I was like, no, that'd be amazing though. Don't tempt me. Just somebody that every day, or even if it was like every 5 days, and I realized they do have these things called bike shops, but I was just like, gave my bike, was like, just make this amazing. That would make me so happy.
I'm going to do that someday.
I mean, I'm with you. Let's go. Let's get into the training questions. What? Because I know people are going to be like, how is this guy so damn fast? You came out of the woodwork in 2020 post-COVID. You've now been on the Amateur Nationals podium. You beat this guy that some people might have heard of, Rahsaan Bahati, in the Masters Crit. I wish he was going to be there this year. He was there two and 3 years ago. I know he's a busy guy, but what? And then the other thing that I think is amazing about you as a cyclist is you are a killer at the time trial, as you mentioned. You win crits and you smash road races. So you pretty much are doing it all. And how do you see, of those three disciplines, what's your best? But then what do you work on the most?
I think I'm probably the best at a TT, but the sad thing about TT is not a lot of people do it. So you sort of don't know exactly how good you are because the fields are so small.
That's a really interesting point. I've never heard anybody, it's an obvious thing, but it's something no one ever says that. And it's just, it's one reason why I've never fully gone in on it. I think it's, and I don't want to say this in taking anything away from anyone that is really into it or has achieved awesome things in it, but it is like, the fields are so tiny. It's how I feel bad for some women cyclists, especially as they're coming up. They have five people in a race. It's just like, oh man, that stinks. But sorry, I feel you on that. It's really tough. So TTs, you're naturally your best, but what do you work on the most?
I work on the TT a lot.
So then who cares? The field doesn't bother you. You're into it.
I work on the TT a lot, and I mean, I wouldn't say I work at something specifically. I train pretty much all aspects and disciplines of cycling. You know, I don't really just focus on one thing because I want to be good at everything.
What is your bread and butter that you see the most on your calendar if we were to look through your training peaks?
So I feel like my coach throughout the year schedules me consistently like climbing located intervals, you know, because as you go through the year, you know, you bring in VO2 max or you bring in sprints and then they go away, and FTP, and things come and go, you know, depending on what's coming up and what you need to be ready for. But that's kind of something that's always kind of there, is that zone three hot, you know, the kind of the sweet spot climbing, low cadence, but not a lot of it. I mean, you know, total time, like 40 minutes out of a ride, you know.
So is it like a 4x10
zone?
Is like 4x10 or is it one big whack?
Like three by 12, you know, four by 10, just that low cadence. You're not breathing hard, you know, you just got the load on your legs and you're doing, I like to run them like at 50 RPMs. And wow. the climbs here are all like super steep and short. Like our longest climb around here is like 15 minutes if you kind of drag it out. So it works good here.
That's awesome. What's your favorite workout that you just, when you see it, you really like it?
So I took some notes so I could be ready, but I'm going to be honest and not try and make myself sound so strong, but one of my favorite workouts is a recovery ride.
I like it.
I like it because I earned it, you know, like I like it because that's my time to really rest and relax and enjoy the scenery, you know, just be as light on the pedals as I can and just truly enjoy just sitting on the bike and rolling around. And that's one. I like zone three intervals on the TT bike because they're not that hard, but you're going so fast and it allows you to really practice the position. And, you know, it's hard to practice the position when you're on your limit, because you have to focus on the effort. You can't so much focus on the effort and focus on dialing your position. And those are fun. You know, I mean, you can roll around 28 miles an hour and just, you know, you're just flying around the roads. I like that. I like FTP on the TT bike because of the speed. I love riding the TT bike because it's so fast. And then another one of my favorite workouts is just the long ride with climbing. Nothing specific. You just go and do what you want, hit the climbs how you want, and just a long ride, you know?
I love that. How do you guys, when people say, I'm going to work on my aero position, say you're going to go out and you're going to ride tempo and you want to work on that, how do you do that when you're riding? Even being like a smart ass. Do you compare times afterwards? Are you looking at the Garmin to look at time during the ride? Is it by feel? Like, no. What's the gauge?
No. So let me preface this by saying that riding the TT bike's really dangerous. And if you ride the TT bike in the fastest way that you can, you don't see where you're going. And there was a time, I hope my wife doesn't watch this, but
you had a great post on Instagram that I was going to direct people.
Seriously, there was a time this summer where I was doing an interval on the TT bike, and I ride the same roads, you know, every day. I know where the intersections are. I can ride the roads with my eyes closed. So I'm doing an interval. I'm like towards the end of it. And seriously, I had my head down, and I look up and there's a dump truck turning from, he's coming towards me, but he's turning in front of me to go to the road to the right. And I look up and I'm like, I'm about to die. And I look up and I just went around him to the right. And I probably cleared him by like a foot and a half or 2 feet, but it feels so much closer. And it was totally my fault. But it was his fault too, because he pulled in front of me. Like, he pulled in front of me. He didn't see me, or if he did, he was just, you know, he's just pulling in front of me. And that really like opened my eyes, because you got to be careful. Like, even if you don't ride a TT bike, you know, what's the guy's name that died in Europe this year in the world tour. But what we do is dangerous. That was one of the points I was going to make. And, you know, I'm getting off the subject. You need to push the limits. You know, when you're descending by yourself in training, you need to push the limit. You need to see how hard you can corner the bike. So when you're in a crit, you can use cornering as an advantage to gap people, or if you're off the front, you know that no one in the field can corner faster than you. You need that as an advantage, but you also want to live. Like, you don't want to crash. If you crash, it's going to take, it can take a month out of your season, or it can take a year out of your season.
Or like your life.
Or your life. It's not worth it. So you have a line to ride there. And back to the point of the position, like, if I'm riding my TT bike, I need to practice what they call the turtle head or whatever, where you're really tucking your head in, because aside from your chest, your head is what contributes the most to your frontal area. So if you can get your head down inside of your shoulders, where your head is not above, you know, if you draw a line around your frontal area, you don't want your head above your back, because that's just adding frontal area to your drag. But when you're out in training, like, you need to know what it feels like, and you need to be so familiar with it that it comes naturally when you're racing, so that when you're at your threshold and you're racing, that's going to come natural because you did so much time in the position when you train, but you also want to live, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, You gotta practice it, but you gotta know what's coming at you. You gotta know the roads. Like, okay, I know there's a dog up there. I'm not gonna have my head down when I'm going by that dog. Or I know there's an intersecting road up here, or there's some houses up there, the cars could be backing out. I'm not gonna have my head down there. You know, it's not like you're riding with your head down for 2 minutes straight. Mm-hmm. You're doing this in little moments. And I'll tell you this, and this is a big competitive advantage to people who may try and beat me or look at me as a competitor in a TT. When I'm in a TT and I know the road is closed and I know the only thing coming at me is the other rider in the opposing lane, I don't hardly look up at all. Like, wow. When I was at Masters Nationals in Augusta, I had my head down. No kidding. Like, I'm talking like 75% of that TT. I look up and I'm like, okay, I've got Minutemen coming at me, and I'm back down. And I'm like, I only need to look up to pass those Minutemen because I pre-rode the course. I know the white lines over here, the yellow lines over here. The Augusta course is super smooth. You don't have to worry about potholes. And you just look down and you see those lines on the, I mean, I hope a deer doesn't run out in front of me, but that's really one of the keys to being a fast time trial rider, is keeping your freaking head down and keeping your shoulders rolled in. You know, I like when I'm riding and I'm thinking about my position, like, you know, when you're in the gym and you do a shrug with the bar, your dumbbells.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm shrugging as much as I possibly can for as long as I can, because as you shrug, your shoulders come in more narrow, and that narrowness really makes your profile smaller. When I was in the wind tunnel, the difference between this and this was 12 watts, 10 or 12 watts. So, I mean, if I can do this for 40 minutes, I'm saving 10 watts for 40 minutes, you know? Wow. So I'm just going to do this as long as I can.
Do you do like planks like that too?
No, I don't. No.
It's a new addition to your training regimen. What do you think is, from all the, you know, you've mentioned the tempo riding is maybe the most applicable to all your training for the different disciplines. Is there any one thing, maybe it's outside of riding, that makes you fast? Like any of the little things, ancillary things that you think have really contributed to you getting to where you're at?
Okay. You kind of threw a wrench in me when you said getting to where you're at, because I had put my answer as, I really thought about these answers because I want to help people as much as I can. But the number one thing that makes me fast is sleep. That I've used sleep as my performance enhancing drug. Like, that's the drug that I have access to. And if I can boost that in whatever little ways that I can, that's what's gonna repeatedly most often show me the immediate bump in my performance, like the next day. But I'll answer that getting to where you are kind of like, you're kind of like looking at it long range. I think I want to answer that later.
Okay. And on the flip side of
point.
On the flip side of sleep, anything that you've done that you feel like has slowed you down?
Yeah. And this sounds kind of dumb to say, but getting sick and crashing. So if you can go a whole season and not get sick, that is going to put you like weeks ahead over the course of the season versus you getting sick like one or two times, to where when I get sick, I get really sick. Like I'm in bed, I don't want to move. You know, I got a fever. If I got a fever, I'm feeling really crappy. I'm not touching my body. I'm not doing any exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And
smart.
Those are big setbacks. And staying healthy and not getting sick is something that you can kind of mitigate every single day of the year. And it's just little stuff. I mean, washing your hands, you know, taking your AG1, if you think that works, avoiding, you know, just trying to, and flying is the worst, dude. Like if I fly or I'm going out of the country, that's when I'm probably going to get sick. And that's when you have to sleep more. That's when you kind of have to look at that like another load on your body, because getting sick a lot of times has to do with the load that you're putting on your system, which normally comes from training. But if you wake up early for a flight, you know, you got that whole day in the airport, you're breathing all that crappy air, it's stressful doing all that. Like you might want to take the day off before that. You might want to go easy the day after that, because if you do, you know, a lot of times you think, oh, I'm going to have to be flying all day to tomorrow. I'm just going to do this big ride because I don't have to, I'm going to be off the next day. Well, then you're going to go through that hard day feeling like trash from your big day, the day before. And then the day after that, you're still going to feel like trash. And then you're going to, you know, you'll want to go smash it the next day. That's not how it works, especially if you get older. So the other thing is crashing. Like if you crash, what things have slowed you down, dude? Crashing, that can like ruin your season. Last year I crashed and I had to be off the bike for like 5 days straight, and then 5 days after that it was like really bad, you know. And when you crash, you'll notice, in your, if you wear a Whoop, you'll notice the systemic change that those big crashes cause to your body. Like it is, I don't see how some of the world tour guys get up the next day and do it, but like how much extra load that puts on your body to recover from a hard crash. Mm-hmm. it can be horrible, man. So that can, you can't crash. Like stay in the front, avoid the Freds and the, and these group rides. Like don't crash.
That's a good point about group rides. Be choosy with your group ride. And if you see somebody that looks
very
sketchy,
choosy,
get away.
Get away from them.
Yeah, I like that. No one's ever said that before. What do you want to improve most on this season? Or I should actually rephrase that, because we're recording this at the end of this season for next season.
Yeah. My power, my FTP power is not that good. I remember like in my 20s when I was really focused on it, the highest I ever got my 20-minute power was like, I want to say 375. I was 10 pounds lighter then, but now my 20-minute power is pretty much the same as it was when I was in my 20s. In fact, it's a little bit better, but it's not good enough. Still not good enough, you know. Like to beat Jaden Jaeger in the TT, he's incredibly talented. I mean, he's doing 400 watts for 40 minutes. And that is really beyond my genetic ability to do. I know that I don't have the genetics to be able to do that. And I know that I'm like probably as aerodynamically optimized as I can be. So I've got to get stronger anyways. I've got to get stronger at threshold, but 10 watts would be amazing. Like 10 watts would be huge. Mm. And then my sprint, like a lot of times, if I go to the end of a race and it's a big group, I'm not the kind of guy that normally will win that, or that's going to do good in that. And I think that's because the true sprinters really shine in that situation. And that's not me. But if I can consistently add 100 watts to my sprint, and I say 100 watts because this winter, my peak of 5 seconds was 100 or 125, 150 watts higher than my peak 5 seconds during the season. So if I could like bring that winter peak 5 seconds to the summer, then when these bunches come down in the last 200 meters, I'm going to gain one or two positions every single race. And that can, for me, that like in a, you know, a smaller event or Masters Nationals, that's like me podium to being the winner. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, in the gym or not worth it?
Yeah.
In the gym.
So I started consistently weightlifting when I was like 13. And I'm talking about weightlifting a lot. Like I had buddies that we would hit the gym like every day. And we were just freaking hardcore about the weight room. And then when I quit racing in 2010, I went from 157 pounds to 185, 190 pounds in like 18 months. And I'm not talking about ripped
or chicken wings.
I'm not talking about being fat. I'm talking about like jacked. So I just went like, I would ride the bike like max one time, like cardio max like once a week, and five to 6 days a week, like super heavy, super hard. And so now I'm not the kind of guy that I don't want to touch any weights for my upper body, because if you see me on a bike, like I'm kind of like a heavy looking guy on the upper body, and that's just slowing me down. And I'm trying to get as small as I can in my upper body. And then in the winter, I'll do squats, deadlifts, lunges, step ups, a lot of core, and you know, hamstring isolated stuff, and that's it. And that's more like for my bone density health, and just to kind of do something different and get that strength back. But I'm not the kind of guy that I start working out in the gym much for upper body, I'm just going to bolt back up again. And I don't want that.
Mm-hmm. Mm, it's interesting. What's the, cause I don't see you as like super bulky, but I've only like,
I feel bulky.
I was actually thinking about, when we were getting ready for the Masters Nats crit, you were the only other person I saw out there. And I was like, where is everybody? No, people are not getting warmed up. I was like, there's Matt. I was like, all right, I'm doing the right thing. This dude's a killer. So I stole this question from you, and I don't know when whose will drop first, but I really love this question. What are some of the routine thoughts that you have when you have a big workout or race to help you succeed at it?
So on a big race, I kind of think about every race the same, in the sense that I try and think about how I can win that race. Mm-hmm. Or if it's let's say it's Sunny King and I'm racing in the pro field, I know I'm not going to win that race. But for me, a win doesn't have to be like I was the top step on the podium. A win for me can be, for example, like amateur Nats. I'm very proud of my amateur Nat this year road race and crit result, because for me that was like a win. I got fourth and fifth, but it's all about who you're competing against. And, you know, if I go to a local race and I win, that can be less meaningful to me than if I go to ACC crit and got 10th. Mm-hmm. You know, as a 42-year-old, that's a huge win for me. And I can look back at that and be proud. But, you know, a lot of it to me is knowing the course, like pre-riding the course, knowing the terrain, knowing like my abilities and what I'm maybe better at than other people and how I can use that to my advantage to win the race or get my best possible finish. I think about that a lot. Like, where would I attack? Where are they going to be attacking and I want to be sitting on? And where am I, where is going to be my moments, you know, where I can make my impact on the race and put people on the back foot? You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
And so I really think about that every single race that I do, no matter how big or small it is. Like a big, like Sonny King, I'm not thinking too much like that. I'm thinking like, how in the hell am I going to be top 10 wheels with three to go? That's, if I can get top 10 at Sonny King, I'm super proud.
Mm-hmm.
And then like with training, like in a hard workouts, like these, some big intimidating workouts.
What intimidates you? Sorry to throw another wrench or another question.
I mean, intimidating workouts would be, you know, a longer ride, but with some very challenging intervals and where, you know, it's going to, you know, when you look at the schedule, whether it's going to take, it might take all you have to get through that workout. You know, you can look at the schedule and be like, that's going to be hard, but I know I'll get through it. It's not going to be that big of a deal. And then you look at others and you're like, I gotta really be ready to do, to execute that workout. And it is sort of like mentally getting ready for a race, mm-hmm. for you to be able to get through that. And you're out there all alone. And all you're doing is looking at that, those numbers and paying attention to your breathing and your form. And, you know, you're just out there by yourself, you know, and everybody may be sleeping or, you know, it may be early in the morning, but, or it may be so hot, you know, and just things like that. You just have to be strong mentally. This is a very tough sport mentally, and you got to have the right mindset to get through that stuff.
I absolutely love that, because I think that every hard workout, at least 1 to 2 times a week, I'm thinking of a workout as if it's like a race, and I'm eating like that. And my sleep is like trying to make sure that's dialed for the next day or the 2 days ahead. And I think what you just said is super underrated, and that too many people that want to get to their whatever their next level is, they just don't take it seriously enough. And one of my friends one time was like, you take cycling way too seriously. And I was like, for sure. I mean, I'm an amateur and I take it very seriously, but it's really important to me. I really care about it. So I don't think it's too serious, because I want to get results and I want to see how far I can go and what I can do. And if you want to do that, you have to prepare for it. It's not like you just show up and it's like, oh, I'm doing VO2 max today. Okay, let's see how this goes. It's like, well, it's not going to be your best, I don't think. That's a good insight. Speaking of insights, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received? And it doesn't have to be cycling related. It can be anything. Yeah.
I'll never forget two quotes that people share with me. One, I was maybe 13 years old, and a guy named Mike Allen, he was the owner of a local running shoe store, a guy I used to run with and train with. He said, he always would tell me, you need to learn to listen to your body. Listen to your body. And that, you know, there's always going to be mentors that you have. He was a mentor to me. And another guy, his name is Ray Stanfield. He was he's the father of a guy I used to race with. And he said he was a cross country and track coach for me in college. And he was always say, leave no regrets, leave no regrets. And he would tell the whole team that, you know, leave no regrets. And those two things, I mean, I think about those two things on a weekly basis, leave no regrets and listen to your body.
What do you think? And sorry, I'm fiddling. My camera's like falling over.
No,
what does that mean? Listen to your body, to the newer cyclist that is like, how do I listen to my body? What is it telling me?
Well, athletics is weird, because on one hand, you have to ignore your body. You know, when you're out there training and you're doing stuff that your body's telling you not to do, you have to learn how to ignore it and push through that suffering, push through whatever signals you're getting that this hurts, this sucks, don't do this. And then on the other hand, you have to listen and be in tune enough and be able to decipher when you tell your brain, when your brain says, this is enough. Like, we're not going to do this workout. We're going home. We're not going to touch the bike tomorrow because you need to rest. And really, when it comes to listening to your body, it's normally focused on resting and preventing injuries. Like, you feel something and you're able to listen to your body enough to know why that part of your body's hurting, know how to fix it, how to do your self rehab to where that pain goes away, or the rest. Like, you have these people who, and I've been one of them in my past, you have these obsessive, addictive type personalities, or they're using their cycling as a coping mechanism for another issue in their life that is bigger than their cycling. Like, okay, so I was I'm a former alcoholic, so now I need to race and ride my bike so I don't drink anymore. Well, that is overriding the signals that your body's going to tell you to not ride. Like, you may wake up and you need to listen and say, I don't need to ride today. And you don't need all this other stuff coming at you that's going to convince you, no, you need to push through and ride, because that's setting you back in your performance. Like, you make the gains when you rest and you take off, not when you're ignoring your body. You know, it's like yin and the yang. It's both at the same time. And it's hard to explain that to an 18-year-old who just started riding. Like, it takes years and years of doing this to know how to do that.
And I think I almost think it's a continual process, because then as you ride more and can train more, things change. Like, the paradigm's always shifting a little bit. And then you find one thing that works, and it's like, well, maybe there's some causation, or is it correlation? And it just, like, that's why I think this journey never gets old. I love when people are like, oh, I've hit my peak, I've been training for 4 years. I'm like, dude, you have not hit your peak. Trust me. You just are at a point where you're not sure where to go next. And that's part of this game. What do you figure? You know, it's like, it's just for, I hope that an athlete out there hears you, having been doing this nearly your whole life, is still like, okay, I need to figure out 10 more watts. I need to get, maybe I'm as arrow as I can get. How do I increase this? What, like, the bullseye is never just right there. And so I feel like I say it too much on the podcast of people wanting this, show me page one of the manual to get me to my fastest. I'm like, well, we can look like the first paragraph, but then the story just starts writing itself and we got to adapt to it. So yeah, those are really, really good points about just, man, you like opened up a can of worms there, but I love this. What's with you being time trialist? I kind of am answering this in my own head, but are you big into cycling tech?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really matter what I'm into. I get into it all the way. And in cycling, that involves the tech too.
What's something in the past year that you've added to either your road bike or your TT bike that's made it faster?
So this is something I put on my Instagram, but when I was in the wind tunnel, well, the first time I went to the wind tunnel, a fitter provided me, I think that he said, tape the bottom of your pedals. I run SPDSLs, and I was like, tape the bottom of my pedals. Okay. So I did it during that season, but I didn't have a chance to test it. And then I went back the next year to the tunnel and I tested it on and off. You know, on the SPD, you have that gap under the pedal. It's like a hole in the front and the back, in the front and the back of the spindle. And so I did it and I put it on YouTube, how much I gained, but it was like, it was a minimum of 5 watts. I don't remember what it was exactly. But little stuff like that, like when you, I love going to the wind tunnel. I've only done it twice, but it's like, it's kind of like a kid getting to go to Toys R Us. It's like you learn so much, and so much of it is counterintuitive. Like you would think, well, you know, that's not going to help. And then it helps. And then you're like, oh, this is going to help a lot. It doesn't do anything.
So do you know the one in North Carolina?
Yeah.
Dude, I need to go there then. So would you,
you should bring your road bike.
Yeah, and I just call. I would just be like, "Hey, just make me faster on the road bike." And
they the second year I went, I didn't use their fitter because I, you know, I wanted to just be alone and I knew what I was doing. But or you know, I will go with you. I'll go and meet you there. I want to go again. But you, it helps to have somebody who like knows and can save you time and like, okay, you need to do that, and you know,
dude, I would okay. I would be interested in that. That's there was I forget how much it cost because I had a rider who was thinking about going, but the cost just was like she didn't want to go by herself.
It's like $600, $550, $650 an hour.
Okay. Yeah. With respect to time, got just a few more. Which any of those questions jump out of you that you want? That you want to answer, I'll say. Like, I'm actually curious what you think is overrated or underrated in cycling. If you got something good for those.
Sort of. I said that, or I'm saying that underrated in cycling is sleep and aero socks. Like, people diss aero socks, but they work. Like,
I
why
love
would
aero
you?
Why do people diss them?
Yeah, why would you have a $13,000 aero bike, but you don't wear aero socks? Like, you know, it's like $25. Just put them on.
What brand are you wearing? And,
Rule 28, or there's another company called Aero Cycling Gear. There's the socks that Matthew Vanderpool wears, and I'm pretty sure all the Alpecin guys ride them. But, okay, here's something I'll share with your reviewers that I learned in the tunnel. When you look at the socks, if you, I've had a lot of different aero socks. The Castelli aero sock, when you put it on, the difference in the fabric is ribbed, right? So the difference in the height of the ribbing is basically nothing. Like the high versus the low is almost the same level. And the Spats is a clothing company. The Spats sock is exactly the same. There's not much ribbing to it, but the Rule 28 fabric, there's a big difference between the high level and the low level on your leg. And in the tunnel, the Castelli and the Spats were like so much slower than the Rule 28. And just by feeling them and looking how they look on my leg and stuff, that's the difference. It's that ribbing, the depth of the ribbing.
That's interesting. So you're saying the depth, the height of it?
So when you put the sock on, you know, the lines go up and down your leg.
Yeah, so it's got to be tall.
Well, tall is good too, but the lines are basically the fabrics the difference in the fabric between the high fabric and the low fabric. Okay. We're only talking like a millimeter, right? It's like thicker and thinner, thicker and thinner.
And you want a big difference or you don't want a big difference?
You want a big difference. Yeah.
Okay.
When there's like hardly any difference, it's not doing anything. They're just selling it as an aero sock.
Did you try Sock Leone?
No, I don't even know what that is.
It's gosh, I'm blanking on his name, was on the podcast from CS Velo, Drake Duel. That was his favorite. They're expensive though. I bought them. They do slide down a little bit, but.
So let me interrupt you. You got to order the spray. You can use hairspray or on Amazon search pre-tape spray and you spray it. You can spray hairspray on your leg and you just let it set, you know, like a minute. And then you put the socks on, they'll never move. I'm telling you, they won't move.
Just like regular hairspray at the store, like aerosol can?
Aerosol can.
Okay. What's... Okay, then I was... Oh, Rule 28. I'm trying to think of the other brand. Vi 13, I just ordered a pair of those because I just went team gloves within the past year after I crashed. So I like their gloves, and they do sell aero socks. So I'll give a review to you later on those. Supplements, yes, no.
Besides, you had asked me what's overrated in cycling. Supplements. Oh, yeah. Okay. Supplements. Like I have this huge list here of all the supplements I take. And if anything I do that doesn't do anything, it's all those supplements.
I love
but
it.
Take them.
So what are you taking?
AG1 Athletic Greens, L-glutamine, beetroot, Tongkat Ali, fish oil, multivitamin, quercetin, turmeric, probiotics, cordyceps, sodium bicarbonate, magnesium, L-citrulline, and beta-alanine.
Bro, your stack is big. Yeah. This is my clip when people are like, you take too much stuff. Because I have,
yeah.
I have a blog about L-citrulline, which I think works. I just can't stomach the taste. And it was just one more scoop in the morning that I was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm like, yeah, dial back. I think that the AG1 is something I would have liked to get into more. I do eat a lot of greens and stuff, but there was an athlete that I knew who was a former pro runner. And he said, you know, at the end of the day, we're breaking our bodies down so much more than what is normal. There's not going to be a correct recommendation for endurance athletes. This was his just own thought. He's like, if you pee it out, you pee it out. But what if you get a 10% boost from something? And I was like, oh, that's a good point. So I maybe should take more things, but I'm with you on the sleep. That is the number one. It's just so important. My last question for you next year, what's the big goal or goals?
I mean, as a master's athlete, I think
hold on, I want to cut you off there. Slash someone who I tell everyone you were on the podium at Amateur Net, so fourth, but whatever. Incredible result, dude. I meant to comment on that before. Like, just freaking awesome. It is something I would kill to get on the podium at Amateur Nats. So you're a master's racer, but you're still freaking badass, dude. So
thank you.
I had to jump in on there in that one. Next year.
I like these national championship events.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about next year, like it's not like to down local events and things like that, but as a father, and I got a 2-year-old, it's like, it's a lot to take the family on the road and go and do some of these races where, you know, truly you only have maybe like 5 guys that are better than you there. It's like, not to sound like braggadocious or anything, but it's heavy load on the time and like the driving and all this stuff. It's like, that doesn't really crank my tractor. I'd rather just go to the big events and just see what kind of result I can get.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more meaningful to me than going and winning something locally, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. I'd rather just stay home.
I don't think it's braggadocious. I think that was actually my game plan this year, and that backfired on me big time. So I would say, not as a red flag warning, just make sure you do the race type efforts, because I was thinking of your comment. I don't know if we were talking on Instagram or after the race, you're like, man, you just needed a few crits in your legs. And I was like, dude, I needed anything that was hard. I'm actually making a video about this, because it kind of dawned on me when I was, you know what? I won't even get into this. I'll save it because it's too long of an explanation, but I just looking back at training distributions of like training rides and how I kind of kidded myself that I could fake it. But I hear you, man. It gets, as we get older, and I got married when I was 37. When I was racing in like late 20s and 30s, some of my buddies who were a few years older and married, I never understood that they were like, oh, man, it's just like, I don't want to be gone. They never said like, I have to be home. They're like, I just don't want to be gone this weekend. I didn't understand that at that point in time. And now it is. It's like, man, do I want to... ask Chris to go to like little town USA, stay in a mediocre hotel. There's not much for him to do. It's his weekend also. It just changes. And so I know what you're saying, man. It's definitely something I've tried to find a balance of feeding that, like, I want to compete. And that's what I agree. The national level event, I know sometimes people like chuckle at Masters racing. And I'm like, dude, look at the start list this year. The older you get, the harder it gets. Like, that's a hard ass race. I don't care whether you're 20 or 40 to 44. So I love that those races get that type of feel. Then it's people you don't know. It's like, man, I don't even know who this team is. Who are these guys? You know, it's like, you don't know everybody. That's the different, like, local stuff. You kind of know who the hitter is. And so anyways, my last question, Instagram, what's the best place for people to follow you at? And then you had mentioned you're getting a YouTube going, and what's the, maybe how do people follow you and find you?
I have a private personal Instagram account, MT Winst-E, but that's like family and bike and everything mixed together. And then I have a Instagram account called the Winstead Speed Shop.
I like
and,
that.
You know, I'm not trying to be a YouTuber or influencer or something. I there's little things that I've learned or learn, and I like doing product reviews, and, you know, I buy a lot of bike junk, and some of it's good, some of it's a waste of money. And I like to if I have the time, it's hard to get the time. I like to, you know, tell people how the products are and stuff like that.
And was that Winstead Speed Shop on YouTube also?
Yeah.
I like that. I really like that name. And I was like, wait, does he have like a bike shop, or does he have a, yeah, it's sort of like all technical things. We're actually trying to think of like an Evoke slogan. And I want to figure out something that is like performance, but also like the mental side of perform, not just like plan and peak and like, you know, like something like that. And, yeah, so you've done a good job. Winstead Speed Shop, like, says it all right there, I think. That's good. Matt, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. A lot of good gems in here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Everybody follow along, hit them up, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. And